Blog Talk Radio.
Blue leather suit. My nails were done. My hair was fierce. And I was riding in a Cooper's limousine.
Don't you want to ride? I want that hot girl and crazy. So I went down to the speakeasy. As soon as my feet hit the door, I had all attention from the dance floor. Don't you know the men all paused?
Everybody to Juwanza for Life. You know what that means. My name is Juwanza, so thank you. I thank you so much for tuning in today. It is going to be a very, very special show, as I always say, and this show is no different. I am excited. I am honored. And you're about to see why. Let me just give you a little background on my special guest today. Cheryl Cooley is the original founding member of the R&B all-female funk band Climax, and they're still going strong. Their music is a staple on the radio and in dance clubs all around the world, belting out hits like The Men All Pause and Meeting in the Ladies' Room. The group's name is synonymous with classic women's anthems. Their beautiful ballad, I Miss You, was Billboard Magazine's number 3 song of 1986, and still to this day is played when love is in the air. Much of the group's success can be credited to Cheryl Cooley, co-founder and original member. She has personally nurtured the group's unique sound by overseeing the infusion of 80s funk with a modern swag. Her enthusiastic vision has transformed Climax into a leaner, meaner entity, producing live music that delivers dynamic vocals and uncompromising grooves. These ladies are serious about entertaining their fans and continuing with the Climax legacy. And I am honored. I got to bow because my special guest is with me now, Cheryl Cooley, Queen Cheryl Cooley. Welcome to Juwanza for Life. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh, wow. I'm looking forward to this. This is great. I appreciate the great introduction. Thank you. Thank you.
I am honored. Have you again? I've been listening to Climax all day today, and this is just a true pleasure for me because I remember when the group came out, and it was just like not just the men all paused, the whole music industry paused, and it was like,
oh,
what? Where did these sisters come from? I mean, you all just burst on the scene, and with this funky sound and I mean, there was sensuality. I mean, even the name Climax,
wow,
just powerful, and it just made everybody stop and take notice. And so, again, for all of my, I know my listeners, they're happy. Don't be shy. If you have a question for those who are listening online, all you have to do is dial 347-324-5727 if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment. Again, the number is 347-324-5727. Wow. Cheryl, let me ask you a question. I got to ask this because I'm always amazed when I talk to people and they have all of this success. You know, I always like to go back to the beginning. You're one of the founding members of Climax, but your introduction to music definitely started way before the group was formed. I mean, you're an accomplished guitarist. Where did the music start for you? Where did all of this journey into music begin for you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My immediate family, my mother, father, and sister, everybody had their own talent. My mother was a seamstress, tailor. My father, he was an artist by any means. I mean, any media, could be drawing, painting. And my sister, she was into dance. She actually went to Juilliard for choreography. And so I came along and, you know, I chose music. So each member of my family had their own creative expression. With my sister going to Juilliard, she met a man by the name of Hubert Laws, who was a jazz musician. And one day he was at my parents' house. They were he was on tour with Mongo Santa Maria, and he had his guitar there, and I was kind of picking at it as a little kid. And all of a sudden somebody said, hey, why don't we get Cheryl some guitar lessons? And so, you know, off went my musical journey. They gave me guitar lessons, and I studied in school, and I wound up actually writing out marching band arrangements even in high school, and then went on to get my music degree in college. So, you know, not that music was in my household, but there was some sort of creative avenue going on in my household. And, you know, my family never, you know, discouraged me or anything. It was like, you know, if that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it, you know. And, you know, with your show even being about spirituality, there was even a parallel to that because my family wasn't, you know, was very open to whatever my spiritual path was also. So they kind of went parallel with each other. My musical journey and my spiritual journey kind of went hand in hand with the opportunity that my family opened up to me.
Wow. You know, you mentioned that you went to college and, you know, got your degree in music, and I don't know what your aspirations were. Could you share with us as you were coming up, and I mean, hearing music and playing music, did you want to be an artist? I mean, when you went to, you know, when you entered into college to study music, was that one of your goals to be an artist? Did you want to write music? Did you want to sing music after you graduated? Because ultimately where you ended up, you know, bursting onto the music scene with this powerful female group, I don't know if that was in your mind back then.
Well, you know, I saw bands on television, you know, the Ed Sullivan Show. You know, I saw those kind of variety shows, and I saw bands on there, and I was like, oh, you know, that looks like fun. That looks like something I would want to do. And very early in my guitar training, I made an affirmation, a decision for myself. That's what I want to do. I want to be a star. I want to be a musical star. That's what I wanted to be. So my focus constantly was looking for that to happen. I never had doubt that it wouldn't happen. I just knew, I felt, I was affirmed in my spirit that it was going to happen by some means. So just the feeling that it was going to happen by some way, some means.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did choose that. It chose me, and so I went forward. But it's interesting. One day, I had a daydream, whatever you want to call it, and I saw myself on stage playing guitar. And, you know, I was getting ready to, you know, it was a big, big audience, and the band was playing, and I was playing, and I was getting ready to step up to the microphone and sing my first note, and I'm kind of looking around, and I look at the band, and I'm looking like, gee, the band looks kind of strange, you know, but we're having fun, it's enjoyable, and I go ahead, and I sing the first note. Well, fast forward 20 years since that dream had happened. We were performing at the Olympic Auditorium. The energy was the same. The crowd was there. The music was going. I was getting ready to step up to the microphone, and I remembered that dream. I mean, it was just as if it came into materialization, just boom, right there. And it hit me. Wow, I'm in that dream. Now let me look to my right and see what it was that I didn't see in the dream that I can now see in reality. And when I looked to my right, I saw that it was an all-female band. Something I couldn't have interpreted 20 years before, but when I was actually in that space, there it was, the answer. It was an all-female band. I was living my dream. I was, you know, as they called me at the time, I was the star, walking up to the microphone, getting ready to sing.
Wow, that's exciting. I mean, as I'm listening to you, you had a vision, even, you know, 20 years prior to it happening, and everything that you did in between the dream or the vision, the daymare, the nightmare, the daydream, and that actual moment prepared you for that moment.
Sure, sure, it did.
You know?
It did. Now, whether I could interpret that that is what was happening to me, probably not. But I didn't question it. I just went ahead and walked into it.
Well, tell us, how did the band Climax come about? Well, how, you know, was that formed? Because, again, the music world stopped when y'all walked into the room. You know, it really did.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's head turned and was like, wow. Did we just see and hear what we thought we saw and heard? You know, so timing couldn't have been better, you know. And I know that people often talk about overnight successes. If they don't, you know, hear of the journey, as soon as you step out on the stage, it's like, oh, they just came out of nowhere. But, of course, you had musical training, you had to study and so forth. But how did that vision of a female, an all-female funk band come about? Because in the early to mid-80s, when you all came out, I mean, just prior to that, the 70s were ruled by male funk bands, and the women were like the background singers, you know.
Right.
So
right.
For the funk bands, mm-hmm. I mean, it was male dominated. So how did that vision of creating an all female, I mean, an all female funk band? Wow.
Well, you know, I mean, in a parallel time, the group had actually started forming. You know, like about August of 79. And
okay.
At the same time, I was playing with various bands. You know, because of my musical training, I was able to just kind of step into different bands and play with some of the, you know, best musicians in town. And I just happened to be in a rehearsal room, and I saw these girls looking in the window, you know, looking at me and pointing, you know, because I was playing guitar with this other band. And they just stepped into the rehearsal room and said, hey, you don't want to play with this band. You want to play in our band. We have an all-female band called Climax. So I was like, well, okay, you know, because it was so abrupt. So something about the vibration. I mean, I had played with some very top-notch musicians, and I just didn't feel like they were at the level that I was at musically. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that was probably, you know, a Tuesday or Wednesday, and I didn't call them the next day, and for some reason something kept gnawing at me. Should have called. At least say you're not going to make it. You know, they just, you know, just call them at least and say something. So I
mm-hmm.
called and I said, you know, I didn't make the last rehearsal. You know, okay, when's your next rehearsal? And they were like, oh, it's tomorrow, Friday. We're going to have rehearsal. I said, okay, I'll be there. So I, you know, walked into the rehearsal and, you know, talked with them about the music. And, I could just feel that the musical level wasn't the same. But they were having fun. They were
mm-hmm.
really having fun. It was an energy I had never felt in a band rehearsal before. So I stayed. And, you know, I wrote out charts, and I realized even writing out charts that, you know, everybody couldn't read, so I wound up having to show them the parts. But it was still fun. It was still, you know, growing a sound. And, you know, first it started off, I was the lead vocalist, and then we attained a keyboard player, and then we attained a lead vocalist. And all of a sudden, you know, the room was, you know, the original members that you have now, you know, in the rehearsal room, and we thought, wow, we really have a magical sound. We really have something going. Well, it just so happened I was working in a bank, and my supervisor at the time, I was telling her about this all-girl band I was in, and I was all excited about it. But again, remember, in the back of my mind, I am convinced that I am going to have a professional music career. I just did not have any doubts. It just happened to have this all-female band that we thought was a great idea, and it could possibly be the avenue for that that dream to come into fruition. So I told my supervisor about this all-girl band, and he said, well, if you give me a tape and a picture, I'll give it to my uncle. You know, he's a producer for Peeble Bryson and Minnie Riperton. You know, those were artists in those times, in the late 70s, early 80s. So I gave her a tape, and she gave it to her uncle. His name was Johnny Pate, and he listened to it, and he was like, you know, it's okay, but I really don't think I can do anything with it. He really wasn't impressed at all. And still, not doubting that it was going to happen, it didn't discourage us. It didn't discourage us to continue to push and try to get the demo tape to somebody who could, you know, help us out and give us our recording contract that we had a dream of. And then a few days later, I got a phone call that they're at the job that I was at the bank, and it was a lady on the other end, and she says, hi, you know, hi, Cheryl, my name is Margaret Nash, and I am one of the vice presidents at Solar Records, and I heard your demo tape, and I want to come and see the band live. So sure enough, she came and she saw the band. She liked what she saw. I mean, of course, we weren't top-notch, but she could see the potential. She could see the energy. She could see the excitement that we had about our own art. So the next couple of days, she brought the president of the company of Solar Records, Dick Griffey, and he saw the band and he liked what he saw, and we were signed immediately. We hadn't even been together for a year, and we were signing a record contract.
Wow.
But it was the intent, it was the direction, it was the affirmation that I knew it was time for it to happen. I had no doubt.
You know, as I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm hearing faith throughout, you know, this conversation. Talk about that role just for a moment, because even with that unwavering attitude of yours, you just knew that this was going to happen. You didn't know how soon it was going to happen, but you knew that this was going to happen. If you could just talk about faith for a moment, because I just or if anybody else in the group had as much faith as you had, but I mean, just from hearing you, I mean, it sounds like you just, that it was a knowing. It was beyond faith. It was like, I know this is going to happen. Not I believe, but I know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and when I look back at that time, you know, one of the things that I hadn't acquired yet, that I think we all acquire as we live each day, I hadn't acquired cynicism. I hadn't acquired a doubt. So all I had was a belief that it was going to happen. I hadn't experienced a disappointment to tell me it wasn't going to happen. I believed so heartedly that that was my fate, that was my destiny. Just to have no doubt. And, you know, and even at times in life now, when that doubt creeps in, I remind myself what it was that I felt at that time in my life for it to happen. And I that in itself, that energy in itself of having no doubt, no doubt. I don't know how to say that more expressively. No doubt. It will get you to where you want to be. Mm. Whatever you believe, you can conceive.
Wow. Everybody, you're here. No doubt, okay. Wipe that out of your vernacular. No doubt, okay. You got to believe it, and you got to hold on to it. And of course, you've got to do things to make it happen. You got to do things to make it happen. But I mean, just with you and your it's like hearing somebody. And I'm sure that, matter of fact, by the way, the listeners online, all you have to do is press 1 if you'd like to make a comment. I see you tuning in. There are people on there who know about faith. There's somebody who I'm looking at right now and looking at their number up there. I know that their sister knows about faith and knowing. So, again, if you want to join the conversation, all you have to do is just press 1. So Dick Griffey, he hears you, they sign you, you know, and then the next thing you know, how long was it before or between the signing and you all getting in the studio and actually cutting your first song?
Yeah, well, actually, if I remember correctly, we probably signed the contract, somewhere between April and August. You know, so we were brought in as part of the Solar family, but our contract wasn't effective until January 1st. So when we actually started recording was, you know, that day one, January, into the studio. Solar had appointed two of the guys from Lakeside to produce us, Steve Shockley and Otis Stokes. And it was their project, you know, to produce this all-girl band and get an LP out as our first LP. And, you know, just the professionalism and being in a professional studio for the first time to be able to do our own music, I mean, it was an experience almost just a, it's, I almost don't have the words to explain, but it's a feeling of, sure, there's accomplishment, but there is still work involved. There's still work involved to make it successful. We learn so many tricks and ideas and things to do musically to make the album happen. I'll just share with you one story that, you know, really kind of jolted me. And I'm not saying it's negative or positive. It's just really a jolt to me. But I remember practicing one of the songs for our first album, and it just so happened that for some reason everybody in the band had a tape recorder, and they were kind of taping the parts that the producer was, you know, explaining to us how to play it, you know, so it would sound commercial. And for whatever reason, I didn't have a tape recorder, so I had to write each and every note down for myself because, remember, I had gone to college. I knew how to do this. So I didn't know how to, you know, I mean, I didn't have a tape recorder. I had to write each and every note down for the guitar part. Well, one of the producers came over to me, and he looked at my manuscript, and he kind of had this really odd look on his face, like, ooh, you know. And so I'm thinking, you know, he's a producer. He knows more than me. Obviously, I must have written something wrong down on my manuscript. So I looked at him and I said, is there something wrong I wrote down on my manuscript? He goes, I don't know. I don't know how to read music. And he walked away. And so I'm thinking, I have been in college for X amount of years. I had hung out with Hubert Laws and the Mongo Santa Maria Band, and they kept preaching to me, if you don't know how to read music, you're not going to eat. And so here I am at this turning point in my musical career, and I'm thinking, I've got all this musical knowledge of how to write note for note, and my own producer doesn't know how to read music. I mean, you know, again, it's not good or bad. It was just how it was at that moment. It was, you know, it was a turning point. It was a learning point for me. But still, the album came out. It sounded great. The producers knew what they were doing. They showed us how to do the songs in a commercial way to really make the album, you know, be something that an R&B band could sell or could produce, could, you know, present to the buying public. But, you know, as the audience, the buying public was, they weren't ready for an all-female band, so our very first album was not successful. But we still accomplished it. We still got through it. We still learned from it. Luckily, Solar believed in us so much they didn't drop us because we didn't sell the first album. But it was a learning experience, I mean, just to do the entire album. So our next album, our first album was called Never Underestimate the Power of a Woman, which I wrote the music for, and that was actually the song that got us the deal from Solar Records. Our next album was called Girls Will Be Girls, and we had the privilege to have a new duo producing group to come and produce a song for us called Wild Girls. And this duo was by the name of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. We were their very first artists to produce outside of the group that they were with at the time. So we had the opportunity to learn in another way of music and how to produce it. Again, a dream come true of being able to be shown how to go into the studio, how to put music together, how to make it sound right, how to make it sellable, if that's a word, sellable.
You were sellable, all right.
Right, you know. And all through that point, we were being, molded and trained of how to be, you know, a commercial viable product of being sold as an all-female band. Again, the second album, it still didn't do that well. It didn't do, you know, it did better than the first, but it didn't do that well. But still, the record company believed in us, Solar believed in us, and we kept pushing forward. The next album, we were able to produce some of our own songs because we had learned along the way. And it just so happened the third album was the album that got us to the public to where they could finally accept an all-female band. And the name of that album, Meeting in the Ladies' Room.
Ah, okay. Okay, so that's when everything started to jump off, huh?
Yeah, it did. And then at that time, you know, music sound had really kind of changed. You know, we were in the mid-80s. There was the, you know, synthesized bass. There was the drum machine. So we were able to kind of mold our sound to go along with the times at that time.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking back to that time and, you know, just remembering again how the music changed. Again, Prince had hit the scene big time. You had the time, and again, like you mentioned, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were doing their thing. It just started working with you all. And, I mean, even as I look back at it, you all came in that meeting in the ladies' room at just the right time. It couldn't have been a better time. I mean, the production on that was, you know, and who actually wrote that one, the meeting in the ladies' room?
Oh, yeah, it's kind of a funny story. The actual meeting in the ladies' room was written by Midnight Star. And, you know, it was about one of the girls in Climax and one of the guys in Midnight Star happened to see each other at a club one night, and he was with his girlfriend, and she was all excited to see him and ran over and kissed and hugged him. And the girlfriend was a little upset, like, well, who is this woman all of a sudden kissing all over my man? So she jumped up and went to the ladies' room, and he thought, that's a great title for a song. So Midnight Star wrote that song specifically for us, Meeting in the Ladies' Room. I'll be back real soon.
That's something, and they actually gave that song because by the mid, Midnight Star was still out there and still making music, and you know, because I always find it interesting when artists give away songs. Well, I mean, they still get the credits, I'm sure, but I mean, a song that could be a hit for themselves, I mean, to give it to, you know, somebody else, that shows that you're secure within yourself.
Oh, for sure. I mean, music is limitless. You know, of course, people sometimes talk about writer's block, but truly music is limitless. As long as you don't put limits on your creativity, you can write songs for yourself, you can write songs for other artists, and even in writing songs for other artists, and if they kind of tweak it for themselves, that's still something that, you know, builds your creativity or expands your creativity in a sense, to be able to, you know, take even a skeleton song and have somebody kind of tweak it, and it's like, yeah, I would have never thought of that. And that even expand your own talent and your creativity.
Well, you know, another one of you all songs that was one of my favorites was I Miss You. That is a beautiful ballad, and it was just one of those songs that's another timeless song. And again, whenever you're listening to songs on the radio, that song, if you're listening to The Quiet Storm, you know, that type of format, slow jams, that song is going to be played. Whose idea was I Miss You, and tell us the history behind that one.
Well, that song was actually written by the keyboard player Lynn Malsby, and she was actually writing about a true life story for her about breaking up with her boyfriend at the time and the things that she went through. And she was really able to, you know, get that whole emotional feeling into the song itself of I Miss You.
Hmm. That was a beauty. That was a beauty. Now, another one that everybody was familiar with and everybody was just like, again, paused and was like, whoa, the men all paused. That song, you know, that song had attitude, you know, it just had swag. It was this female funk band with assuredness. I mean, just like, hey, you know, I know I'm bad. I know you want me. You know, the men all pause to the room. You know, whose idea was that? And tell us the history behind that one. That was awesome.
Oh, sure. You know, one time at one of the rehearsals or something, we're all somewhere in our 20s or whatever. One of the girls said, "Ooh, I'm hot. I think I'm going through menopause." Well, you know, we were at that age to go through menopause, so it was like, take menopause. We should write a song about that. And so, you know, the words were kind of twisted as opposed to menopause, as the men all pause. And so that's how that song really kind of got started. But what people don't realize is that the song "The Men All Pause" really was our first opportunity to make a video. And the video, for the audience to be able to see, it was an all-girl band. That was the turning point for us. The video was popular. They heard the song, "The Men All Pause." It was a good dance tune. They look at the video, and it's like, oh, wow, it's an all-female band. And that really was the turning point for us, was the video, the song. And again, it was during the 80s when a lot of changes in the music business were happening. You know, when you think about it, a lot of artists didn't have video before then, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, if people wanted to see their particular favorite artists, you know, they would have to go to shows like, you know, Soul Train or, you know, American Bandstand. But to actually have a video of one particular song in constant rotation, that was kind of new for us to be able to step into with that song.
Well, when that song hit, again, I remember where I was, you know, I remember where I was. It's one of those songs that you remember the song and you remember where you were when it came out. You know, you remember what you were doing, you remember where you were, all of that. That was just one of those songs that every time you turned around, it stayed in rotation. I mean, every time you turned around, you were that song, you know. Also, and it was like that with Meeting in the Ladies Room, but, I mean, when Men All Pause hit, I mean, again, it just stopped. Everything stopped. So let me ask you, how were you received amongst the men in the industry? Because I'm sure that, again, we just coming out of the 70s, you know, male-dominated funk era, you know. How was the reception by the men in the industry? I mean, because the men in the listeners, the fans loved you. You know, I mean, again, you were sensuous. You all were beautiful, and you know, you just had this whole vibe of assuredness and confidence. But in the industry dominated by men, you know, as far as R&B funk music, the genre that you had chosen to go into, how was the reception amongst them? Were they as supportive? Not supportive, but did they take you seriously, is my phrase.
Well, you know, again, being a performing band, of course, you know, they would approach us like, you know, are they really playing? You know, as a commercial used to say back then, is it live or is it Memorex? they would come to our rehearsals or come to our shows, and they would see that we are actually playing those instruments, and there would be a level of respect that we would get, like, yeah, they're really playing. And I have to say they were really supportive. I mean, I can't really remember any time where there was some guy really being, you know, negative toward us because we were playing our instruments. If anything, they were always supportive because it was such a new thing for an all-girl band to be self-contained and be able to perform to an audience without any assistance from, you know, any man on stage. And they really were very, very supportive. I mean, it was awesome the way, you know, it was like, yeah, you guys get out there. You sound good. I mean, they really supported us. We were really, you know, fortunate to have that type of support. I mean, we had the support from not only just the artists, the musicians that were out there. We had the support of the record company. We had just gotten into a new distributor of Solar, which was MCA, and their staff was always very supportive of us. So we never really ran into anything that just, you know, tried to stop us. But we were always supported by continuing on to be as much as we could be, to express as much as we could. But I mean, we were really making, whether we realized it or not at that point, we were really making a big impact in the music business. At least in the R&B level. I mean, it was an all-female band that had never been seen before, a situation or a musical entity that had never been seen before. So we were really supportive and we were really able to inspire other women to get into music, to be inspirational, to get out there and show them, yeah, you can pick up an instrument, you can play, you know, there's nothing stopping you. I mean, we were really fortunate to be in that position to inspire women to take on the music. And, you know, even the kids that would come to see the show, you know, they'd come and say, well, how did you, you know, learn how to play? And we would constantly, inspire them and express to them, you know, if you want to pick up a guitar, pick up a guitar. And, you know, if you can take lessons in school, take lessons in school, or, you know, get somebody to teach you, or get a self-taught teaching book. We were always constantly telling kids, you know, pick up an instrument. Don't just pick up a microphone and sing. Because, I mean, when you look at females that pick up a microphone and sing, as beautifully as they sing, there are a lot of them. There are sometimes so many of them that you get lost in the crowd. But if you can pick up an instrument and play and sing, then you step out from the crowd. You step out from that great ocean of vocalists that they are. You know, when you're a female instrumentalist, you have something that people are not used to seeing. Even today, when we go out and tour, people are, you know, they're amazed. You guys really are all female band. There are so many people now that still have not seen that. It is amazing, even with TV.
I think that with TV that they would have seen it, but I guess it's still just when you think about the sound and the professionalism and the perfection, that's the word I was looking for, the perfection. Even as I was listening to Climax songs, I was like, these sisters are really playing those instruments. I mean, it sounds like you could read. I mean, when I listen to Climax songs, it sounds like everybody in the band could read. You know, it just sounds like just the chord arrangements and everything.
Oh, sure.
You know, so if you could talk about just the need for people who are musicians, because you have a lot of self-taught musicians out here. You have a lot of people that can play but can't read. Just the picking up the instrument and playing it, it can kind of set you apart. I mean, you look at people like Alicia Keys, who can sing, play, you know, and even if her and when her singing career stops, she can still make music by, you know, writing songs on the piano, you know, songs for other people. So if you could just talk about the importance of, if you're a musician, learning those notes, actually learning to read music, to write music if possible, and the doors that can open for you as a result of that. Because like you mentioned, you were inspired by people who were telling you, look, if you learn how to read music, you'll never have to worry about eating.
Right, right. You know, let's just take it at any art. I mean, even if you know how to draw, if you take a class to enhance your drawing, then that opens up your skills to, you know, make a better living. If that's what you want to do, is make money off of it, make a better drawing. If you know how to pick up an instrument and twiddle around with it, if you expand those skills to be able to read, to be able to write, then you can take that craft and express it in more avenues. The more training you have with any art that you have, with any, I mean, it could be again, learning metaphysics is one thing. To know the topic of metaphysics is another thing to be able to actually teach what metaphysics is about. It's one thing to know about spirituality. It's another thing to be able to teach what it is actually about. If you get training, if you study, that opens up your avenue to be able to not only teach, express, write books, write music. It just opens you up to so much more that you can not only reward yourself, but to also be able to reward humanity. If I can write a song because I learned how to read music that's going to help somebody in humanity, then I have used that training to expand somebody else's consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, my special guest is the awesome Cheryl Cooley, and of Climax. This is one of these awesome interviews that I know I'm going to go back and listen to again and again. You mentioned metaphysics and spirituality. Let's talk about that for a moment, because and the role that has played in your life, because, you know, a lot of people are searching. A lot of people are searching for answers to questions that, you know, plague us all. Why am I here? What is my purpose? You know, why did this happen? You know, we meet people oftentimes on this journey called life, and, you know, I don't believe that there are accidents or coincidences. You know, I believe that every, quote, chance, end quote, meeting is for a purpose, and a higher purpose even. If you could just talk about spirituality and metaphysics and how the role that has played in just how even being exposed to that has maybe put certain things in perspective for you.
Oh, sure. Again, like I said, my parents weren't dogmatic about my spiritual journey or my religious teaching training. They just pretty much, you know, allowed me to go on my own path. And it's interesting because even being, you know, in the group, I mean, there were things that were just so frustrating, and I would be, you know, talking about, why isn't this working? Why does this happen? And all of a sudden somebody said, Cheryl, you've got to think positive. You know, you got to get into positive thinking. And all of a sudden somebody turned me on to a book called The Power of Positive Thinking. And once I read that book, it opened me up to a spiritual journey that I would have never expected before that. I mean, it was one thing to, you know, go to Sunday school or, you know, go to a church, you know, session or, you know, but it was another thing. Once I read that book, it just took another turn for me on a spiritual path, a spiritual journey, a spiritual quest. From that book, I, you know, just kept picking up books about spirituality, about metaphysics, and it just opened me up more and more about the possible mental attitude about things that were, you know, again, possible in life, you know, but I just read a lot of different books, and it has been fantastic the way I have went from, you know, the power of positive thinking to actually being part of a learning session at the University of Metaphysics. And all of the ideas and ideals that they put you through to train you, in a sense, to learn how to use the power of positive thinking, the power of metaphysics, to, you know, show other people not to just live in such a negative attitude, but, you know, an optimistic attitude. If you don't want to call it a positive attitude, fine. But, you know, at least an optimism to where you could possibly think that there is a possibility that something wonderful could possibly happen to your life, you know. I mean, just that one little corner of light to be able to have the, you know, the optimism to have something to succeed, to manifest in your life. You know, I've gotten to a point where I have, you know, I've taken classes and training, and it's so exciting for me when I learn a method of thinking and learning that will, you know, help me to live a better life, help me to live a more optimistic life. Now, are there some dark days? Yes, there are some dark days. There's some days I'm like, oh, this is not working for me. This is not working. But to continually take one step before the next, take the next step. Yeah, there's going to be dark days and there's going to be bright days. There's going to be so many bright days you forget about the dark days. There's going to be a dark day. It's like, was there ever a light day? But you continue on. You just never stop. You never stop. I mean, there was a period of time when, you know, people persecuted me and put a dark light on me and said some vicious lies about me on TV, on the internet. Of course, it brought me down. It gave me, you know, a depression. But getting through that, just like getting through anything else, you get through that, you get to the other side, and there's such a bright, optimistic light to be able to continue life and inspire others and to let them know, you know, I've been there too. I've been to those dark days too. But you know what? There is another side. There is a light side. There is a bright side. There's an optimistic side. You can get through that. If I can get through it, you can get through it.
You know, this is a powerful interview. And again, for everybody that's listening online, if you want to talk to my guest, all you have to do is dial 347-324-5727. That's 347-324-5727. And if you're listening online, if you're listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1. My special guest is Cheryl Cooley of the all-female funk band Climax. You probably didn't know there was another side like the one you're hearing now. That always amazes me too, because when you see people and you get to know them for one thing, whether, you know, their profession is acting or you know, musicians or, you know, whatever it is, the fans don't often get to hear the other side unless it's some scandal, you know. Unless it's some scandal,
yeah.
You know, then you hear the bad side or whatever. But, I mean, through this interview, we're getting to see a side of you that is really refreshing. It's so very refreshing, and I'm just really enjoying this interview. And if you could talk again, just keeping in the theme of what we're talking about, spirituality and metaphysics, because there is so, I mean, when you think about life and you think about the purpose of life and how life for so many people is just waking up, going through the same motions every day, you know, same old, without even a thought of a higher purpose, not just the purpose in their own individual life, but thinking about the purpose of creation. You know, why were the stars formed? You know. Why were the rivers formed? You know, just, I mean, when you think about it and think about the intelligence that had to go into creation, because of course, when we just talk about the intelligence of the creator, if everything is normal in a human birth, then that child has two nostrils to breathe, two ears to hear, you know, hands to pick up, you know, a brain to think. And if one of these things are off, then that child is considered abnormal. So there had to be some intelligence involved in this, and to be able to tap into that higher intelligence. It's more than just, you know, waking up and saying, you know, or going to bed at night, now I lay me down to sleep, you know. You know, there's an intelligence that if we can tap into that intelligence, then we've tapped into the power. Can you talk about that?
Oh, I mean, sure. I totally agree with you. I mean, I don't know how better to say it than what you did. I think that there's, you know, so much outside noise, and when I say that, I mean there's so many things that distract us. There are things on TV that distract us. There's, you know, things on the radio that distract us, and I think we tend to not focus on what I guess call it the essence of life or the essence of our own individual expression. We get so inundated by all the little fun toy things that are going on outside of us that we really tend to forget to take care of the inside of us, you know, our spirituality, our mental attitude. You know, sometimes we, you know, we need each other to remind ourselves, you know, hey, you know, when's the last time that you really took care of yourself on a spiritual level, or you took care of yourself on a mental level? Because from that, you know, we, or even like some people say when they go out for a walk in nature or watch the waves come in, that can also give you a reminder that there is so much more to what's going on than just you, than just your mm-hmm. life. I mean, each individual person is, you know, just a small expression of what's really going on out there in the universe. You know, when you look at some of the scientific shows on TV and you see just how small our solar system is, you know, and you mm-hmm. think about, you know, if you want to think that, oh, you know, my life is just so this and that and the other, and really in the larger perspective of things, your life is just a flicker. So, you know, I would almost say we would need each other to remind each other that mm-hmm. there is an expression that you are doing, or there that you're expressing a minute part of life, of what's really going on, of what is going on. You know, we talk about the universe, but I don't think we can really comprehend just how huge and massive the universe is to really understand what and how we contribute to it.
Mm.
Our, mm-hmm. you know, just our mental attitude, our gestures, our vibrations, you know, it all contributes to that whole mechanism. And if we are able to participate in a optimistic, positive way, or to share with each other, or to support each other, or to give each other some sort of encouragement, that contributes to the vibration of what's going on. Contributes to the vibration of the universe. It may be small or minute, but it still contributes.
Mm-hmm. I'm sitting over here enjoying this interview, and there's a part of me that wants to ask the next question, but there's another part of me that just wants to just bask in what you just said for a moment. You know, this is food. You know, this is my kind of show right here. Okay, and I'm just honored to have the opportunity again to speak with you, because again, the information that you're sharing is right up my alley, and it's right up the alley for my listeners as well. But I know that I want to give you an opportunity to share what's coming up for Climax. If you're going to be on tour, if you've got, you know, new songs coming out, or you know, just to give the listeners, I'm sure that you might be coming to a city near them. Dates you got coming up that you'd like to promote?
Sure. Again, I mean, I never stop believing in the legacy of Climax. I push mm-hmm. forward. I push forward. And because of that belief system, I want to, you know, give witness that in 1 month's time, I have signed a management deal with MEC Management. Mm-hmm. I signed a record deal with a multi-platinum entertainment records, and mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to go on a world tour. I mean, all of that in 30 days because I didn't doubt that the legacy of Climax would has to continue on. It has to be shown to the world. So I have been really blessed that, you know, in a month's time, all these things have really fallen into my lap. In saying that, yeah, I mean, we're in the process now of planning a tour. It's going to start August 1st, and it will start in Columbus, Mississippi. And the tour dates are being routed now. You know, my management is kind of, you know, not always telling me everything all at once. I think he just wants to all of a sudden send me an email. It's like a mountain of dates just pop up, you know. But, you know, your listeners can always go to our website, climax.com. That's spelled K-L-Y-M-A-X-X.com. And we always put our performance schedule there. I mean, there's a lot of information there. There's some of the songs, and we're going to have a new single released on the Sony distribution with the multi-platinum record entertainment record label, and it's called My Way This Time. And actually, it's, you know, it's kind of a story of the things that I've gone through in my path. So we're really excited about the, you know, the tour, the record release, the new record company, the new management company. I mean, all of this has just been such a manifestation of what I believed for Climax to continue on the legacy with.
Well, when you come to D.C., when that tour rolls into D.C., okay, because I'm going to make it a point. Be there, because again, this is that is just some testimony what you just gave in the last 30 days. Wow.
Yes. Yes.
That is.
So I'm going to ask then, so when we come to D.C., we're going to be able to make you pause?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. One more time. Along with everybody else in the room, the whole room, everybody's going to pause.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's you know, I am truly thankful to all the universal energies that were involved in our being able to have these things happen for us. Again, it's not overnight, but you know, when it all happened, it all happened. And I am very grateful for that. You know, the people at MEC Management, the people at MPRE Records, I mean, they've really been supportive, and they're just as excited about the tour as I am. I mean, I love living out of a suitcase. I love being on tour. I love it.
Well, you know, if somebody wants to talk to you.
Okay. Hey, that's great. I mean, I enjoy playing for the fans. I enjoy playing for our audience. You know, playing guitar, playing music, it's a part of me. That's, you know, there's something that is just such a passion for me. You know, again, I always tell my fans and my friends, you know, follow your passion. If that's your passion to make pottery, follow your passion. Make pottery. If it's your passion to, you know, draw circles on canvas, then do that. If it's your passion to be an electrician, do that. Follow your passion. And that's what I'm doing. I'm following my passion. I mean, I can't say that enough. Follow your passion.
Follow your passion. Well, you know what? I want to bring someone on who wants to talk to you, all right?
Okay.
All right. Okay. Extension 4356. 4356, you are on the air with Queen Cheryl Cooley. Welcome to Juwanza for Life.
Thank you. This is Renee. I just want to, first of all, thank you for steering the interview in the direction in which you did. Too often interviews consist of date times and shows, you know, and you don't get to see the personality of the performer, that we oftentimes forget, that the performer has depth. We have a personality and something much more than their ability to entertain us. So you said it earlier, it's very refreshing. It's an amazing thing to sit here and listen and know with confidence that she is totally true to herself and following her passion, and I'm happy to say that. I'm also happy to see that in 1984, the men all paused when I walked into the room.
That's right.
I'm telling you, with class and with style, you know, I appreciate that. And I really do appreciate the music. I appreciate that the longevity is still here, the passion is still here. And I'm looking forward to whatever else you have to offer.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Awesome, awesome. Thank you. You know, it's interesting you say the menopause because really when you think about it, I mean, that is an affirmation. That is a statement to about confidence. You know, when I walk into the room, the menopause, that's in itself. Did we think we were doing that at the time? No. You know, like I said, it was a play on words. But I'm so thankful that, you know, the menopause does encourage, you know, men, women, you know, the men all pause. When I walk into the room, the men all pause.
Mm-hmm.
And they were supposed to.
Queen Renee?
Yes, that's a natural course of things. They were supposed to. And you know, just to say that, you know,
yeah. That
it does empower and encourage people. I really do believe that we are product of what we're hearing. We are a product of where that encouragement is coming from, what's being poured into us. So.
For sure. Yeah.
And
you know,
that
after hearing this interview, when the men hear this interview, Queen Cheryl, not only the men going to all pause, then after they pause, then all the men, they're going to bow. Okay. Then they're going to bow.
And it makes them realize that they're supposed to pause and they're supposed to bow. You know, it should be something that's intrinsic with them to let their woman know and to let women know how much we're appreciated, you know, and not just catcalls. You know what I'm saying? Something that's more in-depth than just ogling at a woman, you know, something that is your natural duty and your responsibility to just lift your woman up. And I don't mean your own personal woman, you know what I mean? Empower the gender. Our men need to empower their young women to know that they're worthy, you know? I think that's a job that too many men shirk. That's a responsibility that they don't see the value in pouring into young ladies to let them know what the proper way is to celebrate you, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. Queen Renee, I thank you so much. You're absolutely correct. And again, with people like yourself, people like Queen Cheryl, you know, staying positive, and I know that you're teaching each one teach one, Queen Renee, and I know that just by your comment that you're sharing that with the men in your world, and, you know, I'm sure that Queen Cheryl, through her teaching and, you know, even just through the positive affirmations and the information and the spirit, just the spirit with which she's going and moving, you know, that energy that's exuding from her, then it's going to command that. It's going to command
that. It has to. I do believe that we've done a disservice to secular entertainers. We reduce them to just the talent that they provide for us, and we forget about the others. And we minimize it when they get on stage and say, I thank God, first of all, to that just being a soundbite, that there's nothing to that. But to listen to her and to know that she has taken the time out to find out who she is in this vast universe and what her role is and what her expectations are of herself, that lends you to understand that she's more than just a 90-minute. So,
hello?
God bless you and continue. God bless you and continue on.
Peace and blessings, Queen Renee.
Thank you.
Wow. This hour has gone by so fast. Again, I'm still numb from the 30-day method. That just how quickly things can happen, you know, if you just keep faith and you have that assuredness, that knowing, you know, again, just tapping into that energy, that vastness. You know, I have guests on who talk about yoga and Kriya yoga, and they always use the term that we are the cosmos in a container, you know, that vastness that is all outside of us is also inside of us as well, that we are the universe wrapped in this body, you know. So if we know that and we can actually just tap into that divinity that is ours, that intelligence that is the creator of all of this, and we have the ability to do that, then things will happen, and it will happen effortless. And like you said, effortlessly. But like, and like you said, there will be days that it might not seem like, you know, any of this is working, you know, but you got to keep on pushing through and pushing through. And because you didn't give up, now you're getting ready to travel the world again.
Yeah, yeah, you can't give up. You just have to keep pushing forward. That is just so important. Just, you know, they have that saying, keep your eye on the prize. Well, you know, keep your eyes forward. Keep moving forward. It's just so important because, you know, the energy that you know, put out is definitely making an effect on each and every living thing.
Mm-hmm.
You may not think that, but it really is, you know. What you the energy you contribute out, the talents that you contribute out, it is so important. It's important to every living thing.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's so important because, again, a lot of times people think that when it comes to making changes or making this planet better, that they have to do it on this mass scale, you know. But if you, like, again, each one teach one, you know, if you share something with somebody and it makes their day brighter, if you make somebody
mm-hmm.
smile, you know,
yeah.
then you've contributed in your own way. You've contributed, and it's not a small way, because the person to whom the smile was returned, let's say, for example, you meet somebody and they're having a bad day, and you say something
sure.
that lifts to them, that's all. That was the world to them. So you might not have reached a million people in one whop, but you put a smile on that person's face, and to them, it made all of the difference in the world.
It does. It does. It really does.
You know, everybody, this hour has gone by so fast. Again, my special guest has been, I'm going to say, and I'm bowing as I say this, Queen Cheryl Cooley. Again,
thank you.
I had no idea that this interview was going to be as powerful as it ultimately turned out to be, and I didn't know that I was going to be as full after the interview as I felt. I just felt like I ate a delicious meal.
Well, thank you so much.
Any final words for our listeners? Again, if she's got a new song coming out, she's getting ready to tour the world again. So if you missed Climax before, you can catch them. Okay, they're coming back. Okay, they are back, and she's just going to take this powerful energy and, you know, bless us again with it again. And so, any parting words for our listeners, Queen Cheryl?
My final words, as I've said before, follow your passion.
Follow your passion. Everybody, that was Queen Cheryl Cooley of Climax again. Sister, I bow to you. You are welcome to come on my show anytime. Again, about the work that you're doing metaphysically, you know, just to, you know, just share again, this is that type of show. You know, we talk about yoga, we talk about qigong, we talk about meditation, we talk about everything metaphysical. Okay, it's that type of show.
Awesome.
So again,
awesome.
I invite
you
to come back anytime. And again, when you're in D.C., please let me know. Okay,
everybody,
we're going to leave you with The Men All Pause. We're going to leave you with the song that had the whole record industry stop and pause. Okay, as I leave, I want to say to everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. As I always say, you could be doing something else, but aren't you glad that you took the time out to tune in? Queen Cheryl, I'm going to call you after the show. I bow to you, my sister. Thank you. This food was delicious today.
Great. All right. Thank you.
Blessings. Everybody, that was Cheryl Cooley. My name is Juwanza. Again, I want to thank you so much for your time. Make sure, stay on the lookout, okay? Climax is back, okay? And you want to catch them when they come to your town, okay? I'm in Virginia, but I'm going to go to D.C. and catch them when they come, okay? I truly thank you so much for your time. Queen Renee, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate you, my sister. Again, everybody, it's been an honor to be in your presence. Peace and blessings.
your blue leather suit. My nails were done and my hair was fierce. See, I was riding in a Cooper's limousine.
Don't you want to ride?
I love you all, but I got to go.